This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. With a word of caution for those with younger listeners, this segment will include some graphic language. Last Wednesday night, the state of Texas executed Ramiro Hernandez Yanez, a Mexican immigrant. He was executed for the 1997 murder of his employer, Glenn Litch. We spoke with Glenn Litch's son, Stephen Litch Tyler, about his expectations of witnessing that execution. Stephen is a professor of economics at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and he has returned to tell us about that experience. Stephen, first, welcome back, and thank you for coming back.
Thank you for letting me talk.
Before you went to Texas, you expressed some hesitation about even going. How did you resolve those conflicts you had about even going?
Oh, it was a difficult decision. I wasn't quite sure why I wanted to do it. I felt that perhaps there was a reason why family members were invited, were offered the opportunity to witness the execution of the person who killed their loved one. That told me that they feel that there is something to get out of it. So, I mean, it was not an easy decision. It was not something I wanted to do. I had no idea what this would look like, whether this would be a traumatic experience. And that was probably my biggest fear, is to see someone die again, to see a traumatic death. As it turned out, that was not the case.
Well, what did happen? Tell us about the experience of being there.
So the execution chamber in Huntsville is a small room. It looks like a doctor's examination room, but smaller. Mm-hmm. There's enough room for the gurney, which looks like an examination table in a doctor's office with two arms extending off to the side. And when I entered the room, he was strapped down to the gurney. When I entered the witness room, which is adjacent to the execution room, he was strapped to the gurney. There was a sheet pulled up over him. There was a thick belt on top of the sheet holding down his waist. His arms were strapped to the arms of the table. And there were IVs, you know, going down his arms into his hands. His hands were wrapped with ACE bandages, which I was told it was not for medical reason, but rather to keep the person being executed from making any gestures toward the witnesses. And again, it's a small room, and the windows of the witness rooms are very close. I mean, his hand was 18 inches from me. So, I mean, that's what I saw. I stepped into this room. He's a very ugly man and very obese, and it was terrifying. It was very confrontational. It was stepping up to I mean, I hadn't realized this, but coming into the room, I realized just how confrontational it felt. I was stepping up to a fight, and I had to confront face to face this person who had done so much to affect my life.
You said that you were, you know, here you were witnessing a man dying. I think you said again, you didn't actually see your father murdered, but you were there in the aftermath.
That's correct.
Right. You were there.
That's correct. And I mean, I've seen the pictures from his death.
And it was brutal.
There, my father had no face left. His head looked like a jack-o'-lantern that had been bashed in. You know, as I said, the last thing that I wanted to see was more trauma.
Was Ramiro already in the room when you got into the witness room?
Yes, he's already strapped down.
Did you have any chance to speak with him before?
No.
Talk about this feeling, the sense that you were in a confrontation, a fight. What? Because we should point out, this is the first time you saw him, right?
Correct. I never met him before he killed my father, and I didn't want to attend the trial. So this was the first time I saw him face to face. And I think we all dread, I don't know, stepping up to our fears and stepping up to the things that cause us anxiety. And I hadn't fully anticipated how much he himself distressed me and how much I was stepping up to really one of the worst things in my life, one of the worst experiences in my life in a physical form.
What happened to your body, to your mind, the instant you saw him? What was going on with you?
Well, my body was fine. My mind, I felt very, very, of course, I mean, just a great deal of emotion, very tightly wound, and a lot of anger. I mean, a lot of just pure hatred and anger toward him. I still feel that way. I'm sorry, but I do.
I mean, anger to the point, did you feel, did you want to go into that room? Did you want to confront him? Did you want to lay your hands on him?
No. I don't want to get physical with him. I feel anger toward him. I'm upset with the situation, to put it very mildly, but not to go up to him and physically contact him.
Did you want to talk to him?
No. I absolutely did not want to talk to him. I hardly wanted to hear what he had to say.
Did he make any effort to make eye contact or to look? I don't know how even restrained he is and whether he's able to turn his head and look into your room.
The only thing he can do is turn his head, and he can look toward the witness rooms. And each witness room is very small. There are two witness rooms side by side. Each is like a walk-in closet. I mean, there's enough room for two people to stand abreast. And the one thing he could do was turn his head toward the witness rooms. Everything else was restrained. And when he turned his head toward the witness rooms, he was looking directly at me.
Can he see? Is it mirrored glass?
It's
or can
not
he see
mirrored
your face?
Glass. Wow. He sees us. He sees us right there.
Could you make out anything from his expression?
So when I walked into the room, he was just lying there on his back, staring at the ceiling, blinking his eyes quickly and biting his lip. He looked very nervous, very anticipatory, but trying to relax.
He issued a statement, didn't he?
He did. He spoke a statement. So the warden was this small, very soft-spoken, very well-dressed man. The warden asked him, would you like to make a final statement? And he said, yes, sir. And then he started speaking in Spanish, and he spoke to his family about how much he loved them and how he was sorry. He spoke to the whole world about how much he loved them. He addressed the warden, thanked the warden, thanked the chaplain, thanked the executioners, expressed his love toward them. He said that he was content. He said that he was carrying no guilt with him. And then he turned toward me and said, and to the family of my boss. So that would have been my father who had employed him. To the family of my boss, I ask that you pardon me, and I want to let you know that I love you. And then at one point during this whole speech, he just turned his head toward the witness rooms and made these very, he blew these very loud smacking kisses, just mwah, mwah, mwah. He did this three times, just turning toward us and kissing at us. And it was one of the most grotesque things that I've seen, that I've felt. He kept talking, kept giving his statement. He said something about how children should listen to their parents, stay in school. He continued to give the world advice, and after 5 or 6 minutes, the warden decided it was over. And as he kept talking, the warden gave the signal to the medical staff, I suppose really the executioners, to start flowing the drug. And then he kept talking. And then the very final thing he said, just the last thing he said before his body switched off, was something along the lines of, "En verdad estoy viendo a la luz y el ángel de Dios." So I am truly looking at light and the angel of God. And just after that, there was a snort and a grunt. So it was kind of... And it stopped. I mean, he stopped breathing. So those were his very last words, and I don't know what to make of it.
You said you found his gestures grotesque. What about his words? What were you feeling as he spoke?
Of course, I felt angry. I felt upset. I felt offended that he referred to, he spoke to the family of his boss, mi patron, not his victim, to his boss, and professing his love for us, blowing kisses toward all the witnesses. It made me angry. It upset me. After the second time he turned to us, I made a vulgar gesture at him. And the third time he did it, I did the same. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But it just upset me so much. Mm-hmm. And I hope he saw. I hope he saw how I felt.
If you've reflected on those words since then, have your feelings changed, become more intense, more angry, less, changed at all?
My feelings haven't changed. One thing that I hadn't expected about his words was that in his words, he said that he had kind of come to grips with the fact that he had committed these crimes and he had hurt people. And you know, he said he had resolved the guilt from that. And so, you know, this is indicating that he came to, you know, he realized what he had done and he thought on it. And the execution, you know, facing this final moment, this very real final moment, I think drove him to that, drove him to really think about the things he had done, the mistakes he had made. And I hadn't expected that. I suppose, and now I look at final statements made by other people who've been executed. I see that same sentiment. So I wonder if this isn't something that comes out of the execution itself, is that people have to come to grips with what they did. And I feel like something that's not something he would have had to have done if he'd just been incarcerated for life indefinitely, hadn't had to look death in the face. And of course, he never would have come. He never would have acknowledged his guilt or even thought about it if he'd never been caught or convicted.
You said that you didn't go to the trial, so you hadn't seen him before this. Do you think that there's a possibility of a similar outcome, that is, a perpetrator, a murderer, coming to terms with the sheer destruction and the cost of what they did, if they were to be in a situation where they would sit down with the victims and all of the people they hurt? If you had a situation, the state won't let you do this. The state takes your crime from you. But if you were able to sit in a room and he saw the look on your face and the pain that it caused, could it come to the same resolution, a deep understanding of the pain and the destruction that he'd caused?
Now, the state of Texas does try to set up victim mediation. If the victim wants to talk to the killer, then the victim can set up a meeting that the killer does not have to attend. It's only by mutual agreement where they can look each other face to face. I don't know if that truly causes a person to confront what they've done and try to find peace with themselves. This doesn't reconcile him to me. This is something that I'm seeing as I'm watching and I'm thinking about it and realizing it's done this to him. And that doesn't bring me any peace of mind. But I do realize that for him, it forces him to wish that he had been different.
What about at the moment when you believe that he had died? What did you feel in that moment?
It's a very solemn moment. So after his last breath, again, this snort, this grunt, then you know, I could see little spittle bubbles forming on his lips as the last air went out of his lungs, drool running down his cheeks. And I mean, I realized this was over. This person was gone. And to some extent, this chapter of my life was closed. You know, a new chapter begins, or my life continues. But this incident in my life is done. It will never change anymore. It will never come back. Everything about my father's death, my mother's rape, that's done. That's finished.
You said before that you couldn't feel safe as long as he was alive. Do you feel safe now?
I feel more relaxed personally. So this morning, I was, before I came here, I was reading a news article, though, about two men in California who had been imprisoned for rape. And then it seems that they had, while out on parole, raped and murdered five women. And I just have to think about how it must have felt for the survivors of their first assaults to know that these people were out there, how it feels now for the whole world to realize they're out there. And I can't help but think about that as a general thing, that there are horrible things that happen and will never be free. There are always these people. But at least for now, the most concrete, horrible person, threatening person is gone. And that's a relief to me personally.
Would you do it again? Are you glad that you went?
I'm glad that I went. Seeing it there in person was very different, very, very different from just reading about it in the newspaper. Any experience will be different when you see it in person than reading about it. Very different. So I'm glad I went. It was not a mountain nor a molehill emotionally. I would do it again, but I think if the family of another victim were to tell me, should they do it, I'd say it's something you can do if you want to. It's not going to cure your anger, cure your sadness, but it will kind of reaffirm that chapter is over, and you don't have to feel that someone else has controlled your life, which was true when the crime happened. I mean, very, very true. Someone exerted power and changed your life, and it makes us feel helpless to know that the event was not within our control, that our world is not within our control. And at least to see that this one person who had hurt us was gone, to me, it made that sense of being controlled go away. So I would say that it's something that someone could attend if they want. It's not going to be traumatic. As you watch it, it's very calm. It's very tranquil. It's like giving someone an anesthetic before surgery. The person simply goes to sleep. I mean, for me, I couldn't help compare it to the way that my father died. I think everyone else will do the same if they witness the execution of a family member's killer. I think they'll have to be thinking about the way that their loved one died and contrasting it with the way that he goes. It's something that I don't expect to feel punishment. I don't expect that other people would feel that punishment has been done or that there's been some kind of vengeance, just to expect that it's over. And again, I think I would do it myself if it happened again. That was your question.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were advising myself a couple weeks ago whether to do it, I would say, probably yes.
Stephen, once again, I can't express enough gratitude for your willingness to come on and be so honest about all of this. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for letting me talk.
Stephen Litch Tyler is a professor of economics at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Just ahead, we're going to talk about a new book about the Duke LaCrosse case. Please stay with us.